Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for January 5th, 2014. First time I've said that, this being the first show of the year. Welcome as always, Catherine Smith.
Happy New Year, everyone.
And welcome back to the show, first time as a guest host from Arkansas, Drew Pritt.
Welcome, and thank you very much.
Oh, glad to have you back, Drew. We had you on a few times, I think, more just as a guest, but then you'll be in for the whole hour. Of course, we'll use your Arkansas knowledge to talk some Arkansas politics, but then you'll join us for some other things, too, and that'll be good on what I hope will be the coldest Sunday Kudzu Vine of the year. I think all across the nation, no matter where you're at, it's the coldest time for you, even if you're down in Florida. With our folks in Miami, it may not be cold there, but it's colder than it usually is. And some other places, it's, you know, 0 degrees, literally. So probably a good day to stay in, talk politics, and listen to podcasts. But, Drew, let's get started. You have in your state one of the most important Senate races in the nation. If you look at control of the Senate, people, you know, kind of pull it down to, say, 5 seats or so. And pretty much in those 5 seats that are really, really critical, Mark Pryor's Senate seat is one of those. What's the race looking at like right now?
Quite honestly, right now it kind of looks like the Green Bay Packers in their game against San Francisco 49ers just a few minutes ago. It's a dead heat. It's, you know, I mean, the Republicans have thrown everything but kitchen sink at Mark Pryor. I think the playbook that they're trying to work out of is what they used against Blanche Lincoln. However, it doesn't seem to be sticking as much right now. The latest poll that has just come out within the last few weeks, which was actually done from a more independent firm, shows Pryor at 48% and Cotton at 41%. You know, the Cotton people are saying Obamacare is dragging, you know, Pryor down. The problem with that is that it was actually Arkansas has made a pretty unique concept with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare in terms of the fact that they came up with their own hybrid because Republicans control our legislature right now. So Tom Cotton has to walk this thin line of not being too critical on that issue because then he's going to drag in Republicans from the legislature that he needs helping him. But at the same time, he's trying to kind of go there. The one unique thing that I thought about that poll that came out, and incidentally, the poll that shows Pryor had 48-41 was actually done by a Republican pollster. So, you know, the inside joke is that the Republicans show Cotton behind, where is he at? But the thing that was very unique about this poll was the fact that Cotton is ahead by 4 points with women. So you started seeing Barbara Pryor, Mark's mother, beloved first lady of the state, kind of stepping out there, and Cotton's been running this ad with his mother, you know, talking about him. And, so it's a very interesting thing right now. But I mean, I'd still give the advantage to Pryor, but this is probably going to be the toughest race of his whole career, right here.
Yeah, now Tom Cotton, I'm happen to look at his website. And you're right; it's more about healthcare, and that seems to be what he's talking about. But just looking at his bio, he's a bachelor, isn't he?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping he's a bachelor, because if he wasn't, he really didn't care much about his wife, because he never makes mention of her. I was hoping she didn't exist.
Well, you know, there's even... What's that?
How do you think that affects people's, you know, view of him, because, you know, somebody that's a bachelor in a statewide race in Arkansas, whereas, you know, I mean, I know there's been a lot of, I guess, power couples in Arkansas, so this is a little different. How are people receiving this?
You know, I think the bigger thing is still with a lot of people is who is Tom Cotton. I mean, we know that he went to Afghanistan, Iraq, and the Army. I mean, he is playing that veteran card for all it's worth. But, you know, we know that he was an Ivy Leaguer. But outside of that, people really don't know who he is. He's never really been involved in Republican Party politics. You know, the family is maybe known. Incidentally, James Lee Witt, who we'll get to at some point, but is running for Congress, is from the same area there in Dardanelle that Tom Cotton's from. But the thing with Tom Cotton, the questions about his relationship and or lack thereof and anything else that may go along with it, we haven't had any Aaron Schock moments yet, but I mean, you know, it's not really playing right now. But I think it's also, in terms of the senator, who also went through a divorce, you know, it's kind of like it's one of those third rails. You know, if they don't bring up about Tom Cotton being a bachelor, they're not going to bring up about, you know, the senator getting the divorce. So it's kind of like a tit for tat type issue.
Yeah, I didn't realize he'd gotten a divorce. I guess his cheapness got to him. I don't know if you remember the ad from 2002 where his wife repeatedly called him cheap and he would defend himself saying he was fiscally responsible, but I remember that ad. I thought it was actually kind of cute. It was playful in the way they did it, but who knows. Well, Catherine, any questions you've got on the Senate race? And if you don't have any on the Senate race, we can move on to a different race if you'd like.
Well, I'm just curious about the health care, because I do think that while they might be thinking that health care is going to skewer prior now, we've got a long time till the election, and I think, I believe that that we're going to find, you know, wide acceptance and happiness and satisfaction with the Affordable Care Act as we move forward into 2014. So what do you think the Republicans are going to use against Mark Pryor when they can't use that anymore?
Well, I mean, see, here's the problem. That's all they've got right now. that's all that they've got right now to use in this this race against Mark. You know, there's no other reason to toss Pryor than the fact that, you know, he's the healthcare vote, and they're doing the same thing in these other key Senate races. The problem is, after a while, it becomes like, you know, an issue where people are like, okay, we've heard this enough. You know, is there another reason why we should vote for you? And unfortunately for the Cotton campaign, they've not developed that line of attack, and they're running into a danger now that more and more the prior campaign is able to define who Tom Cotton is. And that's always a danger when you control that type of ability to express what it is out there. I mean, the other thing is too. I mean, you know, Tom Cotton, you know, he's 35 years old. You know, he's from a small town in Arkansas. You know, he went to Harvard, did well in the military. Not knocking that he did well in the military. That was a great thing they did that. But he's done nothing else. When he ran for U.S. Congress, the most notable endorsement that he picked up was Phyllis Schlafly, you know, who is, you know, I mean, you know, and the 4th Congressional District is definitely a swing district. It used to be a solid Dem, but it's definitely a swing district. The other thing, too, is Pryor's out raising cotton and money. And, you know, the money follows the winner. And you know, at this point, the big thing that he has is the Affordable Care Act. He's hitting it, you know, but he really he lost a lot of momentum also when he voted. Cotton received Stafford loans when he was at Harvard Law School. And then he voted against student loan legislation in Congress once he was there. And so that really kind of hurt him because there's a lot of, I guess you could say, college-educated, I wouldn't necessarily call them yuppies, but definitely professionals within the state here. And, they might vote Republican, but that was like kind of a stab to the heart for some of them. And so it's kind of like, don't know if I really want to get behind you at this point now. And so they're kind of sitting on their hands. The other thing, too, is the fact that the Republicans, just in general, and we can talk more about this as we go through the races, but the Republicans in Arkansas do not have their stuff together yet. The Democrats have, and the Republicans are just, they're still trying to find their foot, so that's just pretty, much the status of the race at this point. And I hope I answered that question well enough, but this is kind of...
Oh, yeah, and all of these things too tie together, like you're saying, when people moving up offices. Well, let's stay with the federal races just because it, gets organized a little neater, and we'll go by district. The first district, Rick Crawford, is the incumbent, and there are, no officially announced Democratic challengers at this point, correct?
Correct. Right now in the first congressional district, we're still hearing some big names floating around. I think the one name, and I think I may have mentioned this last time I was on the show, I think the one name that Rick Crawford just wakes up and probably is crying and sobbing if he ever were to get into the race, and this is not an indication he will or won't, is former State Senator Kevin Smith out of Helena. Kevin is a insurance agent. He's very, very close, both politically and personally, with Mark Pryor, Mike Ross, James Lee Witt, all of them. He used to work as the chief of staff for Senator Dale Bumpers, and he's a prolific fundraiser. And he also owns a farm there in Helena. So, if he were to run, Kevin knows that district backwards and forwards, and it would be game over for Rick Crawford. He might as well just start packing and come home. Clark Hall, who got beat out in the primary, who's more of a blue dog, there's talk that Clark Hall may come back. And, Clark ended his last congressional race with about 200,000. He's kind of like a Lincoln Davis out of Tennessee-style type Democrat. He definitely will give Crawford some trouble if he runs. Outside of that, we haven't really heard any other names. Doesn't mean that there's not somebody brewing. We've got a great new chairman of the party here, and I think he's going to recruit somebody big. But at this point, the names are just Smith and Hall are the two big names that we hear.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, I guess to be fair, I took the first district. If you want to take the second, we can just kind of go back and forth.
Sure. So I didn't do my homework on the congressional races because I was looking at – I got sucked into the Mark Dar controversy. So what's going on in the second congressional district, Drew?
Okay. Second congressional district, Tim Griffin is retired unexpectedly. Tim is kind of like the style of person that Tom Cotton tried to model himself after. The only difference is Tim Griffin had close ties to the Darth Vader of American politics, better known as Karl Rove. But you've got three very key Republicans running in this district. You've got Conrad Reynolds, who is this retired Army officer, another veteran. He ran for U.S. Senate. Conrad is like to the right of Attila the Hun, and he's running in the Republican primary. But the two big Republicans that everybody's looking at is French Hill, who was in Bush's White House. I believe both Bush 41 and Bush 43, was it? Bush 41 and 43 served as aides for them, and he's a well-known banker. And then you have Ann Clamer, who I actually was her in her class in college. She used to be this great Rockefeller Republican then. She's now suddenly become this Tea Party person. And there's actually a group of her former students that started a Facebook group against her because of the way she voted in the legislature. Kramer and Hill are really kind of fighting for the D.C. insider support, and they've got money. The Democrats have already solidified behind Patrick Henry Hayes. Pat Hayes is just beloved. He's just one of those guys that when you hear his name, he's somebody that everybody loves. He's kind of like a David Pryor. He was mayor of North Little Rock for just, gosh, two or three decades, I think, probably. He's a state rep. He was a decorated war veteran. And, you know, in the FEC account this last time, outraised with Kramer, Hill, and Reynolds raised combined. And he's also, Hayes has got the seal of approval from President Clinton, who is vowed that he's going to see Patrick Henry Hayes elected to Congress. So, and this is traditionally the most liberal district in the state of Arkansas. You know, Vic Steyer held it for many years. So I can see Hayes definitely, as long as we keep solidified as a party, I can see Hayes winning this seat and winning the seat for the Democrats again.
Yeah, and it's funny that it is the most liberal district, but yet it's held by a Republican, which means it should, you know, be easier to swing back. But just the fact that we don't hold it now is not a good thing, right, Drew?
Well, yeah, and the fact is that when it came open, when Vic Snyder retired, he retired really unexpectedly at the last minute, kind of like how Ken Griffin has done. And you had a number of Democrats who got in this race. The one who emerged was a very liberal state senator by the name of Joyce Elliott. She beat out the Speaker of the House, who was more conservative for it. And so, as a result, you know, it was kind of like the party was distracted. It was 2010 anyways, which was a bad year for Democrats. And so, and then in 2012, you know, a few names had been tossed out there about running. My name was one of those that came up. But when it was all said and done, we all got behind a very personable attorney. But unfortunately, that attorney, halfway through the campaign, got a DUI and then kind of got in the policeman's face a little bit. And it was all on the dashboard cam. And at that point, his campaign just was dead in the water. So now we're here in 2014 hoping for redemption.
Yeah. Well, let's continue to move through District 3. There is Steve Womack, the incumbent, has a Republican challenger in Tom Brewer and a Democrat who's listed as a teacher, an Iraqi war veteran, and a stand-up comic. Of course, my first question is he funny? But then I guess the broader question, you can just tell us about the entire race as well.
Well, I mean, this is the third congressional district, and any time a Democrat thinks that they can win the third congressional district, they're definitely a stand-up comedian. Just as a point of reference, 1964 was the last year a Democrat won in this district. This is the home of Walmart, of the Walton family, of Tyson's. You know, now, Bill Clinton, with all of his great power, was only able to come within 48% of the vote. You know, Womack, he's, you know, it goes back to the immigration issue and Tea Partiers say he's not conservative enough. Even the Democrat he's running, nobody knows who he is. He's not – I sit on executive committee for the Democratic Party here in Arkansas. I've never met the guy. I'm not knocking him, but I just don't know who he is. So if he's going to run as a Democrat, my personal feeling is he needs to kind of – I hope he's going to be in Jonesboro next weekend and at our annual meeting, and I hope people get to know who he is. But, you know, and there's always a chance. I'm not saying it would happen in this case. I don't see it happening. But he has made some outlandish comments. And there's always a chance that, you know, you can also be refused the chance to run in a primary in this state. So they figure out that he's a plant by the Tea Party, for instance, to get a two-shot deal at with his face, you know, he could get knocked off and not be allowed to run. I personally don't favor that, but, I mean, I've seen them do that within the party before. The big name that we're waiting to hear about is former State Representative Jan Judy. Jan owns a number of pizza parlors. She was a very accomplished state representative. She ran in 2004. She got like 38% of the vote. But I think if Jan were to run again, definitely could probably hit in the high 40s, might set her up to run for a state Senate seat, but more likely she would keep Womack busy in the 3rd District and tie the Republicans down there.
Yeah, it sounds like you're talking about this Troy Giddings. Either he's not a very good Tea Party or he's not a very good stand-up comic, because from what I've seen of the Tea Partiers, they're not really funny people. They're so serious. Everything's so serious for good or bad, so it seems like you're only going to be good at one of those, not both. Well, Catherine, I'll swing it back to you for Tom Cotton's district, District 4.
Yeah, so 4th District, that's where we have James Lee Witt running, so that should be an interesting race to watch, correct?
Correct. And you mentioned Mark Darr. Until all the stuff of Mark Darr came out, Mark Darr was running in the 4th Congressional District. And then when the controversy broke about him and, you know, and his double-dipping and his sticky fingers and ethical challenges, interestingly enough, all this stuff was fed to the media by Bruce Westerman, who's now, he's the House Majority Leader, and he's running in the 4th District. The funny thing is that Westerman was trying to knock Darr out of the way. And while the two of them were beating up on each other, and finally he knocks Darr out of the way, you know, here comes this guy named Tommy Moll. And everybody's like, who's Tommy Moll? And, you know, people still don't really know who he is. He's definitely embraced the Tea Party angle. But the thing about him is he's a self-funder. And so, you know, he's tied in with the utilities. And so Westerman's not going to get out easy out of this and potentially could lose a primary. James Lee Witt is running. He does have a primary at this point with Janice Percival. She's a college instructor. Not sure if Janice is still going to run. I've met her personally one-on-one. She was running just because she felt somebody else needed to run. But ever since James Lee got in, that's been the name that everybody has heard. And so nobody's really heard anything out of her. She's not even been making the rounds to the party events. James Lee Witt vastly outraised what Westerman and Moll were able to put in. You know, Bill Clinton has already, from what I understand, committed to 4 different rallies within the state, and 2 of them are going to be on behalf of Witt or in Witt's district. This is definitely going to be a state that Bill Clinton is going to put a lot of extra time into. But I say right now, James Lee Witt is going to win somewhere. He's, you know, he's talking the right issues. Big proponent right now of raising the minimum wage. He's already picked up the AFL-CIO endorsement, picked up a lot of other union support. He's picking up, you know, Farm Bureau support. I see Witt potentially, you know, taking this seat back and taking 5 to 60% of the vote.
Yeah. Well, Drew, that sounds like the federal races. So now let's move into the statewide races. As we know, for folks inside of state, a lot of times these, you know, governors and, you know, other constitutional offices are more important in your daily life. Let's start at the top. And for the governor's race, Mike Beebe was the 2-term governor, very popular. I mean, in a bad 2010, Mike Beebe was one of the shining stars of the Democratic Governors Association, you know, winning re-election pretty handily and keeping his popularity. And Mike Ross has pretty much cleared the field the way it looks. There's 3 Republicans and 2 Libertarians, but only 1 Democrat. So that tells me he's kind of solidified his lock on the party slot. Is that correct?
Oh, that's more than correct right there. I mean, when the drama with Dustin McDaniel happened and he dropped from the race, and Bill Halter was in there, when Bill Halter dropped out, you know, game over. You know, I'm pretty liberal. And I was there when Ross announced. I was with Dustin McDaniel and and loved Dustin to death, and think he still could have probably weathered the storm and gone on, but he chose not to, decide to focus on his family, which is okay. And I think it's a very admirable thing to do. You know, I've seen some politicians who haven't. But when he stepped out of the way and Mike Ross stepped in, I think there was a general consensus within the Arkansas Democrats that if we want to hold the governorship, we've got to get behind Mike Ross, and we've got to do it now. And I could not name one Democrat that could potentially primary him. And then the thing is also, he has raised so much money, I don't think an Arkansas Democrat would be wise to challenge him at this point. You know, Mike Ross is a money machine. And, you know, and then you've got the Republicans, and it's, they're just so sad right now in the governor's race. I mean, you know, after the whole thing with Mike Huckabee and the moves they made with Rockefeller and Hutchinson, you would have thought they'd been there. But, I mean, their top candidate is Asa Hutchinson, who lost in 1986, who lost in 1990, who lost in 1994, who lost in 2006 statewide races. I mean, four statewide races he's already lost. He's back for a fifth one, which he probably wound up losing. That's assuming he gets the nomination. You've got this businessman named Curtis Coleman who's running, who ran for U.S. Senate, who he's going to peel off some Tea Party support, and, you know, he'll peel off some votes. But the candidate that we're all keeping an eye on, and we're just waiting to see what she's going to do, is Deborah Hobbs. She's a state legislator. She's from up in Rogers, and she can raise money. She's not ahead of race in the money, but the thing is, that base is base up there. And then Ross, by the way, debuted his first television ad today. He's already up on television now with a pretty significant buy. And guess who the face is that's speaking for him? But it's Mike Ross. Or, I mean, it's Mike Beebe. So, you know, I mean, he's already got Mike Beebe speaking for him, and he's talking about education and middle-class families. You know, I mean, this is almost a lock, I would say, at this point for the governorship, unless the Republicans really throw a long ball.
Be careful. Be careful.
Oh, I
don't like to say things like that.
I know, but I got to tell you, you can see some things coming from a mile away, and right now, I'm not saying it won't happen because, you know, Democrats are known to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. But,
yeah, and I would say, I mean, I don't know much about Deborah Hobbs, but I think that that Republican women candidates are to be taken very seriously when running against male Democrats, because I think there's just that it's often a difficult race to play because you have to be kind. People don't like it when anybody's nasty to women. And it's true. I mean, I think it's sexist at its base, but I think we find it to be true. And so, I mean, if she does end up, you know, being a strong candidate, it will change the way the race is played, I think.
I think you're 100% correct. I mean, let's not forget, Ann Richards won her race for governor of Texas way back in 1990. I believe the moment that happened was when Clayton Williams refused to shake her hand. We'll put up with a lot of things in the South, but disrespect towards a woman is not acceptable. And I got to say,
right.
Deborah Hobbs has all the earmarkings. Boy, and I'm going to utter the name. She's the Southern fried version of Sarah Palin. And as much as people like to make jokes about Governor Palin won. And I think Deborah Hobbs is the name to watch out for here in Arkansas.
Yeah, well, that's the governor's race. And since it's Catherine Stern, and I know she wants to talk about the lieutenant governor's race and the current lieutenant governor, I'm going to let Catherine have at it.
Okay, so here's what we've all been waiting for, talking about Lieutenant Governor Darr, who's under Well, Drew, you said in the, before we went on the air that you think he's out.
Oh,
that he's going to be removed.
It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time. He's out. There's too
okay,
many
so,
people.
Okay, so
and
that
started
sets up
impeachment.
Our,
they started towards impeachment now at this point.
Right. So that sets up for our listeners. We'll cover why he's under all this pressure in a minute. But let's talk about so if he is removed, what's the scenario? Do you think they're going to have a special election? Will they wait until November to just elect a new lieutenant governor? Or, you know, what do you think is going to happen?
I think it's six of one, half a dozen of the other at this point. We unfortunately have gone through this twice already in Arkansas within my lifetime. There's been more turnover in the lieutenant governor's office than most of the other offices. And part of the reason why was in 1996, partially due to kidney problems and liver problems, Jim Guy Tucker resigns. Mike Huckabee becomes governor unexpectedly. And actually, Mike Huckabee had gotten in on a special election because Jim Guy Tucker became governor when Bill Clinton became president.
Oh.
And then Mike Huckabee wins a special election for lieutenant governor. Then we had another special election in 96. I was very heavily involved in that one. When Paul Rockefeller of the Rockefellers, he is the grandson, he's now deceased, but he was the grandson of the famous John D. Rockefeller, won, even though he outspent the Democrat, a woman by the name of Charlie Cole Chafin, state senator, he outspent her 10-1. He won by less than 1,500 votes out of a few million votes cast. But then, unfortunately, Lieutenant Governor Rockefeller passed away in office in 2006. I was actually a candidate for Lieutenant Governor that year, along with many other Democrats that were running. And Governor Huckabee chose not to have a special election. At this point, I think when the resignation comes, it's going to determine when. In the case of when Winpole won the special election, you had two years left on the term.
That's a long time.
Right, when Winpole died, you had 3.5 months before the general election. So, you know, there's a short time there. At this point, you're going to have, if you have a special election, then the other thing comes about, well, how are you going to pick your nominees? You can do a primary route. The problem with that is it's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost a few million dollars. And in these economic times, that's probably not such a smart idea. The other option is you can do what they did in 96 when Rockefeller won, and you have party conventions that choose nominees, and you see the old-style conventions happen. Another unique thing in Arkansas is that if you're a member of the Arkansas State Legislature, both House and Senate, you are not allowed to run for another office midterm, nor are you allowed to resign your said legislative office to run for that office. So the only way you can get around it is to go for a federal office. So the problem with that is that you've got two legislators right now who are chomping at the bit who want to be lieutenant governor, both who have called for Mark Yard to be impeached, Andy Mayberry and Charlie Collins, but in a special election, they can't run. So but then you have a Democrat who's personal friends with Mike Beebe, who's his highway commissioner, John Burkhalter, who is a multimillionaire who's self-funding his race for lieutenant governor now. He's not held office yet, and so he could hypothetically run a special election. So a lot of intangibles are still to be decided. But the one thing is that, you know, Mark Darr has, you know, I went out to the bar the other night and was not expecting to talk politics, and two or three people we're talking about Mark Darr and how embarrassed they are. In the Democratic Party, I can say we're thankful for Mark Darr because now everybody has forgotten former State Treasurer Mark Schaffner and the infamous pie box. So, you know, once again.
Well, let's fill our listeners in on Mark Darr's illustrious ethical meanderings, maybe is a word. So he has been using his campaign funds and state funds to pay for a variety of things, apparently, but included in that is gas charges, fuel for his vehicles to regular transportation. So, and he's been charging those to his campaign account and to his state account. Neither of which is legal. So he's facing all these ethical violations. The report I read today was somewhere in the neighborhood of $44,000, but I think it's actually more than that in misappropriated funds. And the ethics committee has fined him $11,000, which is payable like pretty much now, like within 10 days or something.
The one problem with that is that they can't force him to. You know, he says that he's going to pay it back, but even though we have an ethics commission, they've not given the ethics commission the power to force him to pay the money back. So he could say, okay, I'll pay you next week. I'll pay you next week. It would be stupid to do that because it calls for an even bigger impeachment move. But, yeah, ethics commission is more of an advisory board in our state. So they
that's the way it is here, too.
So, that's the sadness of it. But going along with what you were saying.
Okay, so he, at this point, there's been no impeachment, no removal process in the works, correct?
Well, yes and no. Our legislature has been on break because of the holidays. The Democratic caucus as a whole in the House, which is 49, have voted unanimously, called for his impeachment. They're now trying to wrangle up enough Republicans, and it's causing a lot of discomfort in the Republican caucus because you have some people saying, let's get rid of him. He's a stain on the party. He's hurting our chances. We can't talk about ethics like we wanted to. There's others who are like, we can't do that. We're going to lose that seat, and I think they're going to lose it anyways. But it gives even more of an advantage to the Democrat. So it's a very tenuous moment right now. They've got to get the 60 votes. At last count, I know that they have 54 openly calling for it. There have started to become protests. I believe that there's going to be more that are going to come forward before it's all said and done. It's just becoming murkier and murkier. The other thing is the governor has just become livid about this also for another reason, because Mike Beebe wanted to go to a bowl game, but he doesn't want to leave the state and leave Mark Dar as acting governor, because the last time he did that, Mark Dar signed legislation that he felt should be signed into law and also used his gubernatorial prerogative even as acting governor for some pet issues. So, it's like... It's just like, you're danged if you do, danged if you don't. And, I don't even want to say dang, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just not a happy time right now in Arkansas state politics.
A big topic? Like, are people talking about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the thing everybody's talking about. And the funny thing is that, Martha Schaffner, people were talking about it. And I actually drove Martha around when she ran the first time for state treasurer. So, I got gigged by some of my friends about it and some of this, but the Mark Dar thing, I had this one guy who came in the other night to this club I was at, and he goes, man, Mark Dar is my fraternity brother. He goes, our fraternity is so embarrassed. He goes, the current members in the fraternity are talking about trying to expel him from the fraternity, and we have to explain to them why not to. I mean, that's how much of an embarrassment Mark Dar has become in this state. And yet he bumbles his way around. The funny thing is, if he had just left things the way they were when he became lieutenant governor, he wouldn't have gotten in trouble. But he ran on this big deal about, being, I can't think of the word right now, but but showing everything that's going on. And he,
well, transparency?
Yeah, transparency. He ran on big transparency thing. And then the second issue he ran on was that I'm not going to take the state-issued car. I'm not going to have a state trooper driving me around. Okay, yeah, yeah, we see how that's just worked out for you there, Mark. Smart, you know, if he had just left everything. The other thing, too, is that he's behind on one of his loans now. So it's just, the hits just keep on coming for Mark Gnarr.
Yeah. Well, I've never heard of somebody, when the governor leaves the state, the lieutenant governor, thinking they can sign legislation because they go on a trip somewhere else. Because, I mean, you know, governors have to leave the state from time to time to recruit new business, to go to things like bowl games. I mean, my goodness, they could just be doing a myriad of things. And for a lieutenant governor to think they can sign in legislation is quite brazen. Well, I tell you what, Drew, just kind of wrap things up on since we've, you know, pretty deep into the show. Tell us just the highlights of any other down ticket race from Secretary of State down.
I think the biggest thing right now for us is we're waiting to see what happens in Jonesboro. Within another week and a half, we have a special election for a state senate seat up there. Paul Bookout resigned for ethical questions. We have a Democrat by the name of Steve Rockwell who won a very highly fought primary. He started 10 points down. It's deep in red territory right now, and the Democrats are making a fight for it. They may win that special election for the state senate, and that begins their slow slog to try to win back the state legislature. I think that's where a lot of things are. The Secretary of State's race, we've got pretty much a solidified yes. Susan Inman, the former election commissioner, is going to take on Mark Martin, not the NASCAR driver, but a used car salesman, of all things, who's now our Secretary of State. We do love those famous names, by the way, in our state. We got Charlie Daniels, Mark Martin, Paul Revere, George Washington. I mean, you know, we just like to lick the famous names, apparently, down here. The Attorney General's race has solidified for the Democrats again. Nate Steele. Republicans have a barn burner of a fight going on right now. Leslie Rutledge, who was a White House aide, an attorney, you know, say that Yale, I believe it is, I believe it was. She's running as the Republican favorite, but you have David Serling, former city attorney, North Little Rock, and then Hope, you know, he's a Tea Partier. Big fight going on right there. If Leslie wins, she's the first woman ever to win the Attorney General's office, and also, even if she's not me, first woman ever nominated for Attorney General. State Auditor's race, we have the first African-American, potentially, that will be nominated as a Democrat, Regina Stewart Hampton. The Republicans have this weird fight between Andrea Lee, who's a state representative, kind of like an up-and-comer. But then you have these two Republicans running. You have this political organizer named Ken Yang, who is still going to college right now and who is actually making a game of it in terms of keeping it abreast. And then you have Huckabee's old House floor leader, Doug Mateo, former state rep, ran for lieutenant governor, same year I did, ran for U.S. Congress. And so that's a very interesting race. State treasurer's race, no Democrats touched that yet with a 10-foot pole. We're still waiting on one. Republicans have two also rams running for that. And then in the land commissioner's race, you have John Thurston, who only spent $45,000, outspent 3-1, won that race for the Republicans. I want to say the name of the Democrat who's probably going to run. There were some Democrats who actually talked to me about running. It's not going to be me. But there is a great candidate for the Democrats that is all but announced, and I think if he gets in that race, he wins it hands down. So very interesting races coming up.
Yeah, a lot of candidates. People do not mind running for stuff in Arkansas, from what I can tell, just looking at Politics One and the litany of candidates. Well, one final Arkansas topic since we got you on there. Mike Huckabee, after he ran for president in 2008 and, you know, kind of was surprising winning the Iowa caucus and, you know, lasting quite a lot longer than people had predicted, he became a media darling. He had his own TV show on Fox. He had his own radio show.
he started during this Christmas season to step away from some of these things. I guess the contracts run out at the new year, and sometimes they play the best of that week between Christmas and New Year's. What's going on with Mike Huckabee, or do people in Arkansas know?
Well, first of all, Mike Huckabee, to most Arkansans, will say that Floridian, because Mike Huckabee lost a lot of respect in the state, because after he was done with his terms as governor, he up and ran off to Florida, where he doesn't have to pay, I think, like property tax or sales tax or something like that. And that really left a sour taste in Arkansans' mouths. Let me tell you, Mike Huckabee is very slick. You know, they used to give Bill Clinton the moniker Slick Willie. They hadn't met Mike Huckabee yet. I mean, this is a man who used to be head of the Southern Baptist Convention, was president of it, parlayed that into a race for U.S. Senate, which he ran way better than people thought. I believe it was a state senator and somebody else in the primary, and almost, you know, gave Dale Bumpers a scare. Won the special election for lieutenant governor, then ran and served two and a half terms as governor because he succeeded into the governorship. My guess early out right now, and things can always change, but I would not be shocked to see in 2016 see it come down to a Mike Huckabee versus Hillary Clinton race. And in that race, I think Hillary wins it. I think it's close, but I think she wins it. But I think that's going to be the matchup for 2016. Mike Huckabee kind of combines all that you're looking for in a lot of these other candidates into one big one. You know, I mean, he's got like what? He's got like the conservatism that you see in a Rubio or a Cruz. You know, he's got that kind of folksiness you see in Palin. You know, he's got the size of Chris Christie. So, you know, should be an interesting race.
So you think he's running for president? Yeah, I think what it is there is he embodies a lot of that conservatism, but he does it a little happier. You know, we had Herbert Humphrey, the happy warrior. He's kind of the happy tea partier, but he puts a softer spin on those same issues.
I think Hubert really? Humphrey just rolled over in his grave because you compared him to Mike Huckabee.
But you know what I'm saying, the happy warrior. I mean, you know, somebody, you know, even though he believes strongly in his ideals, he puts a smile on it, which is not a bad thing. But if you don't believe in that, it doesn't change how he feels. Just because he's jovial doesn't mean you should start siding with him. I'm just saying that's where his appeal comes
in. I can say this much about Mike Huckabee. I like Mike Huckabee as a person. He's a wonderful guy as a person. And I can share some good jokes with Mike Huckabee as a person. But there ain't no way in heck that I'll ever vote for Mike Huckabee, period. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot of folks that we disagree with. We don't even like him as a person. We think they're just a grump. I mean just somebody that's so, like, you know, we talked about the Tea Partiers. They don't make very good stand-up comics. A lot of those folks are just so into what they believe, it's hard to even see them, you know, appealing on a personal level. Well, I tell you what, let's move on. Since it's our first show of the year, we've got about 11 minutes. Let's do our predictions on our races to watch. We could even fold them together if we need to. And, Catherine, I'm going to let you start off again. Give us, I guess, your predictions for the new year.
Well, I'm going to stick to Georgia because that's what I'm most familiar with right now. And I'm going to say right now that I think we're going to have a new governor in Georgia, and I think his name is going to be Jason Carter. His fundraising numbers came through today, $1.3 million in 55 days. Amazing. And much of that money from Georgia, not as much from outstate as we might expect. I think he's – I think that if we're lucky, we'll see, some, you know, further ethical, you know, discussions of ethical behavior around Governor Deal, and I think that will help State Senator Carter. You know, he'll be able to leverage some of that. So I'm very optimistic about Jason Carter's chances to become the next governor of Georgia. I'm not as And I, in addition to that, I think that his success may help Senate candidate Michelle Nunn raise further votes for her campaign. I'm not as confident in that, but I think that having Jason Carter with her and at the top of the ticket will help her as well. And that's really all I have to say about my predictions for elections. I think my other prediction is that we're going to have a very short session in the Georgia legislature. I think they're going to, you know, do their very best to get in and out as quickly as possible so that they can get back to campaigning and raising money.
Yes,
and I'm very thankful
heard that
for that.
Too. Well, Drew, being our guest, give us some of your predictions.
I've been looking at a few of them down there. I think my biggest prediction I'm going to put right here is that I think, number one, we've got to see Louisiana. And as Louisiana goes, so will go the nation. I think, Sam, as far as Arkansas goes, I think you're actually, just real quick about Arkansas, Pryor, Ross, Hayes and Witt all win the races. I think Arkansas stays blue. If Mary Landrieu wins, I think you're going to see Kay Hagan, Mark Begich win. I think if Mary Landrieu loses, Kay Hagan and or Mark Begich are going down. So I think it's going to all depend on what happens in Louisiana. Is going to kind of tell the tale early that night right there. I think in Wisconsin, I think we're going to see a potential for an upset right there. I don't think the anger has left. I think actually if State Senator Kathleen Vineout gets into the race, I think either her or Mary Burke, who's running now, she's a former State Secretary of Commerce. I think because Scott Walker's thinking too much about running for president in 2016, I don't think he's going to see these women coming up, and they're going to beat him and beat him down. In Georgia, I'm going to go one step better. I'm going to say Carter and Nunn both win their races. And I think as much as it just curls the nose hair of some people to hear, Paul Braun will probably be your nominee out there, either him or Phil Gingrey. And if either one of them is your nominee, I think, you know, it's game over. I think we win that Senate seat. I think Jack Kingston is a much harder haul for us right there. You know, and I think the other three big races I've been watching is that, you know, in Texas, I think Wendy Davis finally returns the governorship back to the Democrats. She's keeping up in fundraising. She's become a rock star. She's kind of like a southern version of Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, the fact that she has a Latino running mate, and Latinos and Latinas make up 4 in 10 Texans, and the fact that she's probably going to peel off some of these suburban women right out there, I think Wendy Davis is the name to watch. The only other race that I've really been watching with interest, and you have to be really a big Politico, I guess, watch it, is in Hawaii. And I think it's an interesting race. Brian Schatz is the incumbent U.S. Senator. He's white. He's Jewish. He was the lieutenant governor. He was appointed by the incumbent governor. The senator who died, Daniel Inouye, had actually asked that his colleague and current congresswoman out there, Colleen Hannah Busa, be replacing him. She's also a Japanese immigrant. So it's a very unique, and I mentioned race to say that, you know, typically when we hear, you know, the differences in race, we think of black, white, you know, African-American versus white. But this is a case where you're seeing Asian, an Asian-American interest, you know, fighting against a group of people that have moved into there, being the white community. And it's a very unique thing. And it's playing itself out in the Democratic primary. So I think Hawaii Senate is going to be a very interesting thing. And the primary is not until August 9th, so there's plenty of time for this thing to blow up.
Yes, apparently somebody's dying wishes come into play there. Well, I'll tell you what. I think that as far as the House, I think the Republicans will continue to hold the House of Representatives. I don't know how many districts will actually move. I think on the U.S. Senate seats, there's just so many to watch, and pretty much all of them are in the South, you know, Arkansas, Louisiana, Georgia, South Carolina possibly, and the Alaska one is another one to look at. But it's going to be really close either way. It's going to be a, you know, Joe Biden might be breaking some ties. It could be, you know, one seat either way. So if something happens, it changes the balance of power. But I think where Democrats may make some gains will be in the governorships. And that's not only in the South. There could be some there, but there could be some like Pennsylvania or Michigan. And that's it's a good thing for folks in those states. Now, it's for us that don't live in those states, we're like, yeah, if we could have done that last term, then we could have seen some gains in Congress because redistricting would have been a little different. The Republicans, you know, on a national scale, won the better election to win because of redistricting. But that's kind of how I see it, because I think Democrats still have not, I don't think we figured out the turnout in non-presidential years, and I think the Virginia governor's race was just kind of highlighting that. Hopefully that was a harbinger and somebody can figure out some way to get some more votes out and make it look more like, say, 1998, but we just have to do it instead of talk about it, and that's the tougher portion. Well, I tell you
and
what.
By the way, real quick, you mentioned the Southern Senate races. The one that's the sleeper race that we need to watch is Mississippi. And the reason why is because while all the attention has been on Thad Cochran and what's his name, Chris McDaniel, that state senator primarying him, Travis Childers, who was a congressman over there and Blue Dog congressman from right over the line from Memphis, has set up a committee and is gearing up for a U.S. Senate seat. And, you know, if Cochran gets knocked off in the primary, there's a chance for Childers to be like the Joe Donnelly of Mississippi.
Yes, it's almost like you listened to our show a few weeks ago when Robert Hooks was on, and we talked about that primary. We talked before Thad Cochran announced for reelection, but we talked about Travis Childers. And Travis has been a guest on our show before he was actually a congressman. Well, guys, I tell you what, we spent so much time talking about Arkansas, which was great, talking about our predictions. We didn't get to any of our topics, so... Catherine, you and I can save those till next week, but Drew will have to miss out because he's definitely in the rotation, but it'll be a few more months, if you will, and we'll get you back on, Drew. Sound good?
Sounds good to me. And Catherine, it was wonderful to be with you on the show.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Good evening, everybody.
Stay warm.
Yes. Echoed.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.